Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. Number to call up as always is 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Jam-packed show coming at you today. Dr. Mehmet Oz, who is obviously overseeing Medicare, Medicaid, for the Trump administration, along with various other medical things. He is going to be on the show in just a few minutes with us. And of course, at the top of hour number two, near the top of hour number two, the mayor of Minneapolis, Mayor Jacob Frey, he will be on the show with us to talk about some of the things that have transpired there, obviously. Not to mention his recent phone conversation with President Donald Trump. He will be here live as well. Looking forward to talking to him. First order of business that I think that needs to be said is that Kristi Noem, Department of Homeland Security Secretary, she has to go. She has to go because you don't need leadership like that at a time like this where you're being so flagrantly irresponsible to the point where it's besmirching everything that's associated with you. Don't know if y'all noticed this or not, but MAGA ain't standing behind Trump and everything he does the way they were the first few months of his presidency, his second term in the White House. They're not doing that. Matter of fact, they're questioning a lot of things because over the last 3.5 weeks or so, two individuals have been gunned down by ICE. Two American citizens killed on the streets, in the streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the streets of America. And they're not illegal immigrants. They weren't criminals. They weren't people that were rapists and thieves and murderers who crossed our borders illegally. No, these were American citizens protesting in their own way, as unorthodox as some may deem it to be. In the case of Renee Good, it was driving a car and it was turning to the right and trying to get away from ICE officers who had asked her to depart from her vehicle. Renee Good tried to get away and apparently there were three shots. One went through the windshield, hit her in the head, killed her. Less than 3 weeks later, Alex Pretty, who was a nurse treating veterans, was gunned down, shot by two separate agents. Apparently 9 bullets were aimed in his direction, and he was killed. And what we heard from administrators in Trump's cabinet was not the kind of things we want to hear. We heard from a vice president who attached guilt instead of being a bit more responsible. We've seen Pam Bondi laying down the heavy hand of the law as the attorney general, making demands and just shoving aside the fact that two people were murdered, not accusing her of not caring, not going that far, not being irresponsible, but saying that the rhetoric didn't indicate anything such to the degree that it should have. But nobody has been worse than Kristi Noem, the secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, who, by the way, has been invited on this show, by the way. We invited her to, right? She hasn't taken us up on that offer as of yet. Don't blame her one bit with the questions I'd have for her. But nevertheless, before I go any further, I want you to take a listen to just some of the sound coming out of her mouth as they say, trust us, to local and state officials in Minnesota. Trust us, as they said to Minneapolis law enforcement. Trust us. Give us access to voter rolls. Give us access to this or that. You understand? Saying all of this stuff, asking you to trust them. But before an investigation took place, a second of an investigation took place, a second of probing was exercised. Listen to the kind of stuff coming out of the mouth of the Secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. Take it away, people.
Did the 37-year-old who had a license to carry, did he brandish a gun? And at what point did law enforcement retrieve the gun and also the magazines from him? Can you offer clarity on
this individual showed up to impede a law enforcement operation and assaulted our officers? They responded according to their training and took action to defend the officer's life and those of the public around him. And I don't know of any peaceful protester that shows up with a gun and ammunition rather than a sign. This is a violent riot when you have someone showing up with weapons and are using them to assault law enforcement officers.
So in other words, just spit in our face and tell us it's raining. In other words, don't believe your lying eyes. Believe us. Because when we saw Alex Pretty on the ground, face down, on his stomach, yes, he did have a weapon. Yes, his weapon was licensed. And he had the right to carry. That is true. But in the same breath, with all of that being said, ladies and gentlemen, there were four officers on top of him. Four officers. So if you got four officers on top of the man, trying to cuff him or whatever the case may be, how come you couldn't contain him? We can deal with that question another day. But one of the things that we have to pay attention to is what I alluded to yesterday on my YouTube show, and I'll reiterate and regurgitate right now. GOP's in trouble. This is the year of the midterms. And with the rhetoric that's been being spewed, with the chaos that's in the streets, I will remind y'all, I'm telling you again, that is why Trump lost the election in 2020, and you did lose, sir. It's why he lost. He didn't lose because of the economy. Because before COVID, the economy was doing fine. He didn't lose because of those issues. He lost because of chaos in the streets of America. Because people saw what was transpiring and they weren't comfortable with it. And they don't want chaos. You've got people on the right now at this particular moment in time alluding to the level of chaos that exists within the Trump administration. As we speak, they're incredibly alarmed by what they're seeing. I'm reading from something called the Dispatch article. These are folks that pride themselves. They swear up and down. They're talking facts. And I'm not here to impugn their integrity, reputation, or anything like that. I'm just reading what they wrote here. The Trump administration has people that favor the right in a lot of people's eyes. This is what they wrote. The Trump administration has had an extraordinary few weeks dragging the American people along for the ride. Federal agents have, as of this writing, shot dead two American citizens within weeks of each other in the same city while clad in masks and military gear and carrying out a campaign of paramilitary-style immigration enforcement that appears far more interested in theatrics than deportations. In both cases, the Secretary of the Department for Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, who I just alluded to and played that sound, has rushed to label these shooting victims and by extension other ordinary Americans protesting immigration and customs enforcement tactics, terrorists. In recent days, we've seen high-ranking administration officials try to retroactively justify the agents' actions by advancing arguments that infringe upon Americans' First and Second Amendment rights. These are people that favor the right that are now talking about the Trump administration in this regard. No wonder we've seen what Trump and what kind of position he's taken. To summarize, he talked to the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey. And what does Trump say? I'm shaking things up. I shake up teams, Trump said. He praised newly arrived Border Czar Tom Homan as tough but effective, noting Homan has already met on the ground with Governor Tim Walz and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. This is Trump recasting changes to immigration enforcement in Minnesota as a pivot as opposed to a pullout. Now, Mayor Frey has exacerbated the situation, no doubt, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about it because he points out how, listen to this quote, Minneapolis does not and will not enforce federal immigration laws. He said, I spoke with President Donald Trump today and appreciated the conversation. I expressed how much Minneapolis has benefited from our immigrant communities and was clear that my main ask is that Operation Metro Surge needs to end. The president agreed the present situation can't continue. But then Mayor Frey goes on to say, despite mounting scrutiny, Trump said he still has confidence in DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, crediting her with securing the border. This is the kind of stuff that's going on. But Jacob Fry is telling you in 1 minute he's saying that, but in the next breath he's saying Minnesota does not and will not enforce federal immigration laws. So which side of the aisle are you on, America? You got to answer that question tonight. You got to think about these kind of things. The president just came out with something on his Truth Social platform. He said, surprisingly, Mayor Jacob Fry just stated that Minneapolis does not and will not enforce federal immigration laws. This is after having a very good conversation with him. Could somebody in his inner sanctum please explain that this statement is a very serious violation of the law and that he is playing with fire? It's chaos. And incumbents don't win where chaos reigns. Somebody needs to tell Trump that. And it better be the members of the GOP, because all you need to do if you're the Democrats is regain one House of Congress, if not both. There's an election coming up this year. And make no mistake about it, the Democrats are in a better position than they've been in quite a while. They better not blow this, because if they blow this, they ain't going to recover in time for 2028. I'm here to tell you that right now. This is the time. You got to make sure that you dot your I's and cross your T's and don't do anything stupid. Don't speak out of turn. Don't exacerbate situations. Don't make the American public rife with independents out there who have grown to such numbers. In some people's eyes, the independents are outweighing the amount of registered Republicans and Democrats. Don't exacerbate situations to the point where we're able to say, excuse me, you're just as chaotic, you're just as loose, you're just as off kilter as you're saying the Trump administration is. Don't give them the ammunition, because if you do, you're going to blow it. Because right now, Trump and the right, they're blowing it. And it starts with Kristi Noem, who needs to go. You know why she needs to go? Because you're exacerbating the situation. What are you doing saying that about Alex Pretty? Or they good when you didn't investigate? Why are you asking for an investigation when before the investigation even took place, you already had defended the ICE officers and instead condemned those who were protesting? How could you possibly be trusted? Nobody should trust you. That's what the issue is with Kristi Noem. And you know who's not making it any better? That would happen to be the Attorney General. Pam Bondi. She's not making things any better. And I'm going to tell you why. Because she's had some demands. Okay? She comes to Minnesota. She's saying we're on the ground. And according to reports, 16 people have been arrested. They've been arrested because they were messing with law enforcement officials, federal law enforcement officials. And in the process of dealing with all of that, what does she do? She issues three demands. One, access to voter rolls. She requested that the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice be given access to Minnesota's complete voter rolls. She stated this was necessary to confirm that the state's registration practices comply with federal law, specifically the Civil Rights Act of 1960. So in other words, you want access to the state's private information. It's citizens' private information. How do you think that's going to go over? That's a no-no right there. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to do that. They're not going to be cooperative because it's a sanctuary state, sanctuary city, and they're already non-compliant with federal immigration laws to begin with, and they're telling you they're going to be. So that's not going to cut the mustard. Then you got this one, welfare and benefits data sharing. The letter demanded that Minnesota share all records related to Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program with the federal government. Bondi argued this is required to investigate and prevent fraud within state safety net programs. That's a little bit trickier, because if you're the federal government, obviously, if you're Trump, you can use that as a weapon and say we're going to compromise the financing, federal finances and federal funding to sanctuary states and cities. And even though in most instances, the heavy hand of the law is going to infringe upon his desires, it doesn't escape the fact that, hey, he ain't trying. They're going to try to stop him, but he's going to try to go for it. Last but not least, repeal of sanctuary policies. Bondi called for the state to end its sanctuary city policies and cooperate fully with immigration and customs enforcement. This includes honoring immigration detainers and allowing ICE agents to interview and remove individuals from state prisons and jails. That's where it gets interesting. Because if you have crossed the border illegally and for some reason you are incarcerated because of a crime that you may have committed, it had nothing to do with ICE at the time. What is wrong with ICE and the feds insisting that the states, local and state government, let you into their jails, let you into their prisons to get these individuals and deport them back to where they came from. You got millions upon millions of American citizens that ain't gonna have a problem with that part. They'll have more of a problem with the voter rolls and other things before they have a problem with that. So why wouldn't you do it? You're the Democrats. You're fearful of opening the Pandora's box. Give somebody an inch, they'll take a mile. Can't blame them when it comes to this administration, because you see folks that are so interested, so fixated, so addicted to trying to be impressive in the eyes of Donald Trump that they lose all sense of decorum and professionalism. You don't sit up there and convict somebody in a court of public opinion without an investigation if you are the secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, speaking with that incendiary rhetoric, being so one-sided, and then in the aftermath of it all, you're going to ask for an investigation? That's nonsense. There's so much to get into, but in the end, I think Tom Homan is there, the border czar. He's there for a reason, to bring calm, because she ain't doing it. And neither are a few others. Trump's got some decisions to make, but it ain't about the state of Minnesota or the city of Minneapolis. It's about his own damn administration. That's all I got to say about that for now. We're going to get to some health issues, because God knows, with everything that's going on in this world, stress is a profoundly powerful thing that could debilitate us all. Our health should be our primary objective, psychologically, physically, and otherwise. And who better to talk to about that than Dr. Oz himself, Dr. Mehmet Oz. Handling business within the Trump administration as we speak. He's up next with yours truly, right here on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Don't go away. Welcome back, Straight Shooter in the house with yours truly, Stephen A. My guest is a former television host and physician. He now serves as the 17th administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in the Trump administration. Please welcome for the first time to the show, the one and only Dr. Mehmet Oz. How you doing, sir? Long time no speak. How have you been, sir? How's everything?
I'm doing very well, Stephen. I know you talk about sports most of the time, but obviously politics has a athletic element to it. So in this job, everyone gets lean because we're working our tails off. But, you know, we build teams. We fight for victory. There's a lot of parallels, which I know you appreciate.
No question about it. Let me get right to it. I got to ask you, because you're working closely with Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on the Make America Healthy Again agenda. Last week, the administration launched a nationwide tour called Take Back Your Health. Explain what that's all about, sir.
Well, we took the food triangle, which had been an advertising approach to trying to figure out what foods to educate Americans to eat. And we actually put it back the right way up, which is to emphasize eating real foods, whole foods, foods that come out of the ground, looking the way they look when you eat them. That's the goal. And if you try to make America healthy, the way to do it is to make it easy to make the right decisions. These are foods that people generally like. By the way, meat's back on the agenda. You know, you're not going to run away from all the fats. Because if you don't eat a balanced diet that includes fats, that means you're going to probably pop up the numbers of carbohydrates you consume. And unfortunately, in America, a lot of those carbohydrates are simple carbohydrates. All the white foods, white sugar, white flour, et cetera. And they're a problem because the body converts them all to glucose, sugar, and eventually deposits them as fat in your liver, on your hips, in your belly. And there are problems that arise from that that are devastating to the American people, but also devastating to the healthcare budget, because you've got to pay for the consequences of obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes. These cause heart attacks, they cause dementia, they cause cancer, kidney failure, lots of problems you don't want to have to deal with. That's why when we were negotiating the most favored nation drug pricing, we made sure we put the weight loss drugs in there, because we'd rather you eat the right things to lose the weight naturally. But for some Americans, that's become a real issue, and there are some genetic differences. So no matter how you get there, we want you exercising, eating right, or taking advantage of medications that now can be beneficial. But I'll give you a number, Steve, it's going to blow your mind. Within 2 years of when we signed the most favored nation drug pricing deal with the president, within 2 years, we're going to have the average American taxpayer pay less money by giving away these drugs. For less money. Why?
How do you know?
Because we're going to save so much.
How do you
We
know you're going to do that?
calculated out based on data we knew from the commercial insurance business, because they're very careful at how they collect data, because they want to know if they're when they buy medication for a patient, what's the actual cost to the system, and do they have a possible savings? If you look at the clinical trials on folks who are taking these weight loss medications, now, assuming they're taking them correctly, and they got to keep taking them to get these benefits, they lose enough weight that their complications start to go down pretty quickly, within months. And within 2 years, now that you have less diabetes, less high blood pressure, the consequences of those problems start to diminish, and that's hugely beneficial. Because now you are just all of a sudden have less people go to the hospital for preventable problems. This is the real promise Secretary Kennedy's been offering. If you make America healthy again, you actually save the healthcare system money, but more importantly, you unleash all this talent. And, you know, and you're in the space, Stephen. You're looking all the time at, you know, are you getting the most talent out of your players? Our right. most important players, the American people, are saddled with illnesses and chronic diseases that hold them back. If we could just get the average American, Stephen, to feel so healthy, so vital, so with it, that they want to work just one more year. Just think about that. That unleashes about $3 trillion of money for our GDP. All that extra productivity because people are healthy enough to go to work.
Dr. Oz, what's the difference between what you're promoting and what you're pushing along with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. compared to what previous administrations had done? Because everybody preaches about good health. Everybody preaches about eating healthier. You're a nine-time daytime Emmy Award winner, okay? How many best-selling books? I'm looking right now. You got 8 New York Times best-selling books. You've been talking about this. Yeah, I met you. And the first time I met you, we met for like 60 seconds the first time. We met each other on several occasions. We met with each other for like 60 seconds our first time. And in those 60 seconds, you were asking me about my health. Are you doing this? Are you doing this? I'm like, damn. I mean, I just met the man. He's all the way on me. But I love it. I love it because it's the right thing to do. What's the difference between what you guys are doing now compared to what previous administrations were doing, sir? Highlight that.
It's about priorities. What are you actually going to focus on the most for the team? And in our administration, we believe throwing money at insurance companies, trying to buy more drugs, these aren't the long-term solutions. Focus first on what it takes to get people as healthy as they can possibly be and talk about it incessantly, because that is the ultimate solution to keeping our nation fit and fighting and ready to do the great things that productive countries like ours can do. Now, if you can't get there with just diet and lifestyle alone, and we got to do a lot of things to make that easier to achieve, then you got to escalate it, use medications if you need be, encourage people to get into the healthcare system. A lot of what we don't do is just basic primary preventive care. And just to point to that, many folks watching right now, Stephen, they don't have a doctor in their life. They don't have someone that can be their coach, so to speak, to give them advice. So we've actually taken money from specialists. I'm a heart surgeon, as you know. We took money from the pockets of the specialists because we make a lot of money, and we gave it to the primary care doctors. We wanted to invest more in folks with small practices, especially in rural parts of the country. The $50 billion we just gave out to rural America, the largest ever contribution from Medicaid into the healthcare system in this specific sector, that's a 50% increase in what we're spending in that area. That's going to unleash all kinds of opportunity for the 60 million Americans living in rural parts of the country. Get them to catch up because their life expectancy keeps falling behind. And Steve, if you look at the overall numbers, for when you and I were young, we had the same life expectancy in this country as they have in Europe. Right now, we're 4 or 5 years behind. Let's talk about you for a second. You look like a gazelle, right? I don't know how you do it. That's what I was trying to, I was asking you selfishly to find out how you do it. Right, but you have, right? But you've done things to your life to keep you fighting strength and fighting form because you're fit. So you do things, you've figured out some solutions. Many Americans, they lose the story, they lose the narrative. And we're going to get everyone to feel the optimism, to feel the gusto they should have about life, to get their mojo back.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And to answer your question directly, let me make sure I erase your intrigue. About, you know, during COVID, I had my A1C levels were pretty high. I was 0.1 point away from being a full-blown diabetic at a cholesterol level of over 300. My sugar intake was so excessive, I walked around with 29.8% body fat, okay? Wow. I was just an absolute mess. So when I got COVID, it almost killed me, almost took me up out of here. So since that moment in time, whether it's peptides, whether it's supplements, I also make sure that I supplemented that by eradicating my sugar intake by about 80 to 85%. Plus, I'm in the gym 5 to 6 days a week doing something. Yeah. So my body fat went from 29.8. It's now at 13. My weight went from 208 pounds. I'm down to 181. Okay, even though I'd like to be about 185. And I make sure that I minimize my sugar intake. But most importantly, I exercise. A lot of times, and I'm getting to this, we see a lot of people out here looking for these drugs, particularly these weight loss drugs and things of that nature. My point is, if a doctor advises you, a doctor like Dr. Oz says, okay, this could be very, very helpful to you, can minimize you from being a full-blown diabetic, it can cut down and manage your sugar levels, etc. To me, it means nothing if you're not willing to get into the gym and exercise and get that heart rate pumping and all of that stuff, and you're not even willing to make an attempt to eat right. Am I wrong in saying that, sir?
You're 100% on topic. I'm going to give you a number that you can use in the future to anchor what you just said. If I can get the average American to walk 20 minutes a day, so 20 minutes of activity,
walk.
Running,
you're not,
some
you're not
activity.
Right, just walk, all right.
Walk, but do push-ups, yoga, whatever you want to do, 20 minutes a day. It'll probably save us $100 billion in health expenses. The difference between a person who's sedentary, who watches Stephen A. Smith on the sofa all day long, and one who's willing to walk around the room and do a couple sit-ups while they're watching the show, $100 billion. So the solutions are right there in front of us, but someone's got to put a little energy, little muscle, and lean into the possibility that you have more control over your future than you could ever have imagined. And it's that empowering message that I think is going to carry the day. Now, we're talking about the tools we have right now. We're investing massively in a tech transformation, primarily using tools like artificial intelligence, not to replace doctors, but to make it easier for doctors to see patients and spend time with them, make it easier for patients to get advice day in and day out and meet you where you are. So if you're walking around with the elevated blood sugar level, right? Because you got borderline diabetes. Right. I want to be able to get into your life and coach you. You know, if your first thing in the morning is to have a donut, if I can talk you out of that and get you just fast a little bit in the morning, which isn't that hard for most people. Remember, our ancestors did not get up in the morning and find food ready for them. They have to go hunt their breakfast. So, you know, it's okay to not have your breakfast till 10:30, 11 in the morning. Yeah. That little bit of time gives your blood sugar a chance to stabilize for the day. You end up finding out that you can be sort of cool in the face of some adversity if you don't have blood sugar going up and down, making you irritable.
Right. By the way, I try not to eat before 12 noon, and I try not to eat after 9 p.m. because I don't go to sleep until after midnight because I got to watch the games and stuff like that. So that's basically that 8 to 9 hour window is where I try to eat. And I try not to eat after that, which has also helped me as well. I want to get to my next question, because in your role, you oversee an agency with an annual budget exceeding $1.7 trillion that provides health coverage for more than 160 million Americans, approximately half the U.S. population. And your jurisdiction includes Medicare, all right, the federal health program for seniors and people with disabilities, Medicaid, the joint state and federal insurance program for low-income individuals, CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, Health Insurance Marketplace, the federal health insurance exchanges, healthcare.gov. Affordable health care in this country is top of the mind for most Americans, obviously. Where does the administration stand on extending the ACA subsidies at this particular moment in time?
So we have been looking throughout my 1 year in office at ways we can protect these programs. I feel passionately, Stephen, about the need for us to protect our most vulnerable. Hubert Humphrey, whose building that I'm in now is named for, said famously that it is the moral obligation of government to take care of those who are at the dawn of life. Those are the children. We cover 53% of all kids in America. You got to cover all the folks who are at the twilight of life, the elderly, and you got to cover folks living in the shadows, he said. Those are folks who've stumbled, they've fallen, they've had trouble getting up. So across the board, we've been pretty aggressive trying to make sure that all those programs are healthy. One of those programs was created in order to catch people as they come out of poverty and begin to enter the workforce. That was called the ACA, the so-called Affordable Care Act. And it was plugging along, doing okay till around 2020. And in 2020, because of COVID, there was a desire to give extra subsidies. Now, you already get 83% of all the money that's paid into this insurance program. Okay. You already get subsidized most of it. There was an additional subsidy that was added to it. It's that little extra bit that we're talking about. Here's breaking news for you. We just released it as I came on air. The number of people who were on the program was around 24 million people. The number of the people who are currently on the program after we took away that extra little subsidy and didn't renew it this year, same basically, no real change. And the reason for that is the average person, think about it, you go into a restaurant and the proprietor says, you know what, 90% off. And then they change their mind and they say it's 83% off. Do you leave? 83% off is still a pretty good deal.
That's
it's
right.
not 90%, but 83% is pretty good. And the average person on these programs is paying between $13 and $25 more a month for their insurance. That's a heck of a lot less than the average person watching right now. So we believe the real focus shouldn't be on throwing more money at the problem. We need to make healthcare insurance cheaper to buy. And how do you do that? By reducing the cost of care through the actions that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. And there are other things we're bringing to bear, like this most favored nation drug pricing that I hinted at with the weight loss drugs. Mm-hmm. See, even think about this. People don't recognize it, but we historically have paid three times more for the exact same drug made in the same factory, often here in America, than it costs in Europe or Canada.
Why?
How is that possible?
Why? Yeah, how is that happening? Why?
Well, you sound like the president. That's what he said to me. Why? What's going on? How is it possible? You know why, Stephen? Because nobody challenged them. Nobody looked them in the eyes like you do in negotiation and said, be honest here. Do you think it's right that we're charging three times more for the same drug in America than in Europe? And they all pretty much said, yeah, you know, we knew one day you'd come. So you came now. President Trump was forcing the issue. All of the drug companies pretty much have come on board now. They've all agreed to sell for the same price in America as Europe. They want fair pricing. And that's saving the American taxpayer a lot of money. That's how you drop the premiums.
Dr. Oz, how healthy is the average American citizen compared to average citizens in other parts of the world at this moment in time?
We're faring poorly. I'll give you a number. Let's talk about obesity, which drives most of the healthcare budget more than any other issue. The number of Americans who are actually obese, not overweight, obese, is 43%. That's more than twice Europe. It's 10 times more than Japan. And so how do you balance healthcare expenses when we're twice as fat as Europe? They're going to end up spending less money than we do. Now, there are other reasons for that as well. But I believe if people really appreciated that obesity is really a barometer of your overall health, that the things that it causes to you are ones that you should feel control over because you do have remarkable abilities to reduce your weight. Again, lifestyle is the best way to do it. All the things that you talk about all the time, and, you know, channel all the athletes you get to showcase. All those folks, they treat their bodies like they're Lamborghinis. Right. So you don't have to be a Lamborghini, but you got to move a little bit. And the most valuable thing you ever got from your parents is the gift of your body, the temple of your soul. And we don't respect how vitally important that is to our well-being. And frankly, if you're not sleeping well at night, there's a pretty good chance it's because you don't take care of your body during the day. If you're not able to get yourself into a peaceful place during the day and deal with the stresses of life, the complexity management challenges, a lot of that comes because you haven't taken care of the tool you were given, which is your body.
Dr. Mehmet Oz, 17th Administrative Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Let me get to something more specific. What's the issue with you and the governor of California, Gavin Newsom? I mean, I just recently saw an article. He fired back at you after, you know, you posted a video claiming Los Angeles is at the center of multi-billion-dollar hospice and home care fraud. He fired back at you. What is the issue with you and the governor of California, sir, specifically?
I'm going to hold the governor accountable for doing what a governor is supposed to do. If you know fraud is existing in your state and you don't take care of it, you're hurting your most vulnerable citizens. Let's pick two examples that are very concrete. There's no real debate about these issues. You know what hospice is, right? It's designed to help people at the end of their life, usually because they have cancer or they're dying from a terminal illness. And you're supposed to give this precious service only to people who are actually dying. The number of people in hospice in California has gone up sevenfold, seven times, 700% over the last several years. How's that possible? Are there more people dying in California all of a sudden? No. A lot of these centers, these new places that have opened, they have 100% survival rate, Stephen. 100%. No one's dying. So obviously it's not really hospice. Now, this has been talked about for years. And the governor has tried some small things to try to fix it, but the fraud has continued and is stripping billions of dollars out of the system. And those same fraudsters, once they know they can get away with it, they start doing home health care fraud. So now all of a sudden the people coming into your house are not really needed. And maybe they're just being sent there because they get paid. And all these other services start to grow out of whack. 9% of all the money we spend on home health care in America is in Los Angeles, in one city.
9%.
One city. 9%. That's five times more than it should be. So I'm here trying to administer your taxpayer dollars. And I'm telling you that people in New Mexico who don't have a ton of money, people in Mississippi who don't have a ton of money, they're paying extra tax dollars to the federal government in order to put it into California, Los Angeles in particular, to make up for the fraud that we're seeing there. And I don't have a way of stopping that unless the governor takes it seriously. So we, under the president's leadership, have said to all the governors, we're going to audit you and check what you're up to. We obviously have had problems in Minnesota. We're dealing with that. We're having problems now in Southern California, Los Angeles, and we're insisting that the governor address this. I sent him a very mature letter saying, here's the problem. I want you to look at this. We work together to help the people in Los Angeles. And of course, he'd rather fight on Twitter about whether I'm doing it the right way or am I, acting like an administrator is supposed to. This is not personal for me. You know, he can do whatever he wants to say in the public airways, but I'm here to make sure the American taxpayer is protected, but even more importantly, to make sure the American people, our most vulnerable citizens, are given the best chance. If you are defrauding people with hospice needs, people who desperately need these services because they've got some terminal illness, and so they can't get them anymore because you've given them the fraudsters, I'm coming after you.
What's your bigger, what's your focus as it pertains to vaccines? Because we've heard stuff from RFK Jr. Forgive me, I have nothing against him. I respect the man and what have you, but I want to hear from Dr. Mehmet Oz. That's who I want to hear from. When it comes to vaccines, the viability of vaccines, what your opinion is about that, people alluding to it being used, being needed, others giving the impression you never need any vaccines. I'm not vibing with either side particularly so, but I want to know what your feelings are, particularly as it pertains to what the data has shown you, to its effectiveness, its efficiency, et cetera, or lack thereof.
So let me just start off with a fundamental statement that should put everyone's heart at ease. No matter what you want to do with vaccines, we're going to pay for it. And Secretary Kennedy has been out in front about this. You may have different opinions about which vaccines you want to take. You may not like all the things that the secretary's been saying, but we are going to pay for your vaccines. We don't want anybody, especially children. Again, we cover most children in America are in Medicaid. They're born in poverty. I don't want any of these kids or their parents ever being worried that they're not going to be able to afford the vaccines. We're going to pay for all of them. That's my job because I run the insurance, the public insurance systems on behalf of the president and for the secretary. Now, let's get to the root, the specific issue that you're bringing up. The Europeans give less shots than American experts have recommended in the past. A lot less shots. Some countries, half the shots that we give in America. So the secretary has said, well, why don't we just see if we can adopt some of the European approaches and see if that might work for Americans. So he said, okay, all the European ones that we that are commonly given, we're going to call those the essential ones, the core ones, the common ones, the ones that are everyone sort of agrees need to be given. And then there's some other ones that you might want to give as well. And that's up to you if you want to give them. Again, we're going to pay for them no matter what. But that gives parents an opportunity to pick. Now, here's one of the reasons that might have merit. In Denmark, the authorities there have said that by limiting the ones that are really, really critical, the core ones, everyone gets those. Make sure every mom gets those. There's no fatigue from too many shots for your kids. We want to get the other ones too, but they're not the core ones. So let's make sure we get the really important ones in. And the other ones, if you want to get them, you can get those as well.
Before I get off this subject, because I just got a couple of questions left, because I know you got to go, and I really appreciate your time, Dr. Oz. Last May, Texas, the state of Texas, was at the center of the nation's largest measles outbreak in more than two decades, with more than, I think, more than 700 reported cases that sent dozens to the hospital and led to the death of two unvaccinated children. South Carolina also recently reported more than 700 cases as well. You've expressed support for ending school-mandated childhood vaccines. As a medical professional overseeing Medicare and Medicaid, how will you ensure that reducing mandates does not lead to a resurgence of preventable diseases that could strain our healthcare system?
Well, the measles that you mentioned right now is one of those core vaccines. You should get the measles vaccine. Okay. There are a bunch of vaccines that, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get past some of these very dangerous illnesses. My father was one of 11 children. Five died in childhood because of communicable diseases like the ones you're talking about. Whooping cough, in his case, was a common problem. So there are some illnesses we really want to vaccinate against, and we want to make sure that we get more than 90% of moms to get those vaccines for their kids, because that's how you get broader immunity. There are other ailments where it's not essentially get that number, or it's a different kind of a problem, but also every kid is different in terms of the risk factors we have. I trust the moms. I'm from Pennsylvania. A lot of moms in Pennsylvania homeschool their kids because they're worried about all the vaccines they're asked to take. And they're wondering, is there any way I can get a little bit of relief and get the really important ones and be able to take my kids to school? Otherwise, I'm going to just pull them out. And we don't want that happening either, Stephen. There is a thoughtful, rational way for us to vaccinate our population, but give the autonomy to the parents who love their kids more than anybody else. Now, do I get to ask you a question?
Yes, you do. Go ahead. Go ahead. I got one more question for you, but you could ask me. Go ahead.
All right. So did you get to play a doctor on General Hospital? Be honest here.
I did not. I have been a surveillance expert for the mob, and I actually killed somebody in the hospital.
Oh, my God. All right.
I had to protect my mom's divorce.
All right. And the other thing that I'm so impressed by is people don't know this, but Stephen A. Smith went to the Fashion Institute of Technology.
That is true.
But that name has always confused me. Now, what is it? I see there's fashion on the website, but there's technology there and it's an institute. So why is it called that? What's the technology part of the deal?
I have no idea. I went there on a basketball scholarship for junior college. We were 35-4. I majored in advertising and communications. And when I went to Winston-Salem State, I transferred from advertising and communications to mass communications, which is why I was able to graduate with honors. That's my answer to that question. It was good, though. It was good. Dr. Oz, let me, before, because I know you got to go, I want to ask you this. In July 2025, you authorized the transfer of personal data for more than 79 million Medicaid enrollees to ICE. How do you justify a policy that could deter immigrants, including those here legally, from seeking essential health care because enrolling in Medicaid may expose them or their families to deportation? How do you answer that, sir?
Well, first of all, everybody, no matter whether you're here documented, not documented, you get to get emergency care in America. You have a crisis, you go to the ER, you will get care. We have laws called EMPALA that protect you, again, no matter what your status is. But by law, I have to share information from our data sets with appropriately requesting agencies, which is what happened last year. And we're going to continue doing that. This is not a desire to take out the availability of emergency care services. But there are a lot of folks who come here illegally, and they're getting a lot of great health care, and they're not paying for it. And especially illegal immigrants that are charging the American taxpayer, we ought to know about it. I'll give you a good example. And back to California, not to pick on poor Governor Newsom, but they have been giving illegal immigrants in California full benefits. By that, I mean they get vision, they get dental, they get things you don't get on Medicare even. They get things that other states don't give their U.S. citizens. And so if they're going to be so generous with those benefits, why should I, again, ask New Mexico, Mississippi, Alabama, all these other states to contribute extra tax dollars when they don't have enough of their own states? And so in that case, I went to the governor. I said, you owe us $1.6 billion.
Wow.
And they're paying us. Because they know they did it. So you want to provide those services, you pay for those services. We'll provide emergency care. That's, again, it's our obligation. We don't want, God forbid, a mom having a child with a crisis and not providing that care. We're always going to do that. We're Americans. We'll take care of our most needy. But you don't get to come to America just to take advantage of a great healthcare system and not contribute to it.
Dr. Oz, I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to let you go by saying this. You ran for the Senate in 2022, and you lost the general election to Fetterman. But I will tell you this. I don't know if that was necessarily a bad thing for you, because what you're doing right now, I mean, you know, with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, I don't know if you would have been able to pull off this much effectiveness if you were a senator, sir. Am I off my rocker by saying that?
Well, I tell my team here, and I do have a fantastic one, that I have the best job in the world. And I've got to be a heart surgeon. I got to host a TV show like you. I got to run for Senate. But this job it's the bee's knees.
9-time Daytime Emmy Award winner. You knew what you were talking about. Everybody watched. I know I watched you all the time. Dr. Oz, it's really, really good seeing you. Great catching up with you. Know this, you always got a home here. Anytime you need to talk, you want to come back on the show, I welcome you on with open arms. Anytime you want to come on, man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Bless you, my friend.
All the best. The one and only Dr. Mehmet Oz right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. The man knows what the hell he's talking about, I tell you that much. I mean, he is a 9-time Daytime Emmy Award winner, 8-time New York Times bestseller. I mean, the man knows what he's talking about. You say what you want to say. And he made some good points, some very, very valid points about money, how it's being used, how it's being misused. And Gavin Newsom, like he said, it ain't personal. He's just letting them know where he stands and what needs to happen effectively in the city of Los Angeles, in the state of California, in order for things to be steered in the right directions. Worthy conversation, no doubt. Honored that he gave me the opportunity to have it with him. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. You are listening live to Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Back with your calls and more in a minute. 23 minutes past hour number one, back here on the Stephen A. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. coming at you. Let's go to the phones real quick before we start off hour number two. Let's go to Cameron in New York. You're live with Stephen A. Cameron, good evening. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Stephen A.? Nice talking to you, man. I really enjoy your stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Go ahead, buddy.
People who are down the middle and can talk to both parties. So I'm a very left-leaning person.
Okay.
So, well, not very left-leaning, but I'm more moderate, but I am on the left. So some interesting things you said on the left. You said, it, from my understanding at least, something that you really don't like about the left is cancel and woke culture.
Yep.
And that is something that's usually identified with the left. But what we saw from Trump this past year, his administration, is canceling Jimmy Kimmel, as short-lived as it was. He canceled Jimmy Kimmel for a joke that he told, which...
Well, Jimmy Kimmel's still on the air. He tried to. Jimmy Kimmel's still on the air, but go ahead.
No, absolutely. Thank goodness for that. Stephen Colbert, he's canceled. Mm-hmm. You had J.D. Vance telling people to pretty much call their employer and get them fired if they said anything about Charlie Kirk.
Okay, but you know what that is. You know what that is, right, Cameron? That's retribution. That's what he's doing.
What do you mean by that?
He's retribution. You know, he's Trump is on a payback tour. Everybody that he's targeted has been against him.
Do you think that at this point it's fair to only identify cancel culture with the left and not the Republicans?
I don't think it's fair, but I think that when you see Trump, you don't think about cancel culture. You think about him exercising vengeance. I think when we saw when the Democrats were at the helm, was a collective effort when it came to woke and cancel culture that affected a lot of people that actually supports them overall. And I thought that was appalling, because if you're my enemy, you're my enemy. But if you're my friend, I expect a different kind of behavior. And I don't expect to be canceled for pronouncing the wrong pronoun or anything like that. A lot of times you see folks and they take a position and they shift and it's like, wait a minute, where the hell did this come from? This is going to have more of a detrimental effect on the people who actually support you than anybody else. I think in the case of Trump, you've got people who disgustingly fawn over every little thing. You notice, Cameron, how everything they do, they always got to sit up there and take a moment to praise him, to talk about his great leadership and how he's one of one and he's all of this stuff. I mean, this dude passes gas, they call it perfume. It's embarrassing. You see what I'm saying? But it's about vengeance on his part. You know, Jim Jordan was a guest on this show weeks ago. And when I pressed him on it, do you remember when Jim Jordan said, well, they did do a lot to him, Stephen? Remember that? That's the kind of stuff we're talking about.
And that's the argument that a lot of people are using. Like, well, he said all these crazy things about us, so we should get back. It's just a whole bunch of craziness. Just out of curiosity, did you see the attack on Representative Omar yesterday?
I did not. I heard about it, but I didn't see it. I heard it. I was listening to it while I was driving in my car. I did not see it, but I heard about it.
Yeah.
And that's so reprehensible. There's no excuse for that. That's reprehensible. No. That's wrong.
But Trump, and I don't remember the exact quote, so pardon me on this. He did say, oh, I don't think about her often, but
it's disgraceful.
I think he said something to the effect that it was staged, and maybe I'm just thinking that because so many people on social media, on Truth Social and things of that nature, have said it's staged. And once again, you think about Charlie Kirk and Trump's own assassination attempt. Now we like to identify all of this political violence.
Hey, listen, Cameron. Are you listening to me? Are you listening to me real quick, Cameron? Mm-hmm. Do you remember, mm-hmm. let me tell you one of the most disgusting things to me. Do you remember when President Trump at the time in his first term, Elijah Cummings, representative out of Maryland, passed away in October of 2019? And Trump literally sat up there and was like, wouldn't pay homage, wouldn't have anything nice to say, and said, you know, he wasn't very nice to me. He wasn't very complimentary of me. That's why Trump wouldn't say a kind word about him when the man passed away. So again, we don't need to regurgitate point by point to make the point about Trump that we wish he exhibited significantly more class. We wish members of his administration didn't fawn over him the way that they do. We wish that people were more committed to this country and the Constitution rather than they are committed to him. But that's not how he assembled his administration. And we all know that. Hour number two coming up next. The mayor of Minneapolis, Minnesota, Mayor Jacob Frey, he's had a lot to say about Trump, and he spoke to Trump via phone over the last 24 hours. He's up next with George Truly, Straight Shooter in the House. Hour number two up next. Don't go away.
But I do have a message for our community, for our city, and I have a message for ICE. To ICE, get the fuck out of Minneapolis.
Welcome to hour number two, a Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A., coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio. As promised, I've got a guest. Been waiting to talk to him for a little while now. He is a former civil rights attorney and the 48th mayor of the city of Minneapolis. It has undoubtedly been a difficult month for his city, so I'm grateful that he's taken time out of his busy schedule to join me tonight. Right now in attendance, Mayor Jacob Frey of Minneapolis. Good evening, sir. How are you? Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here.
Stephen A., thanks so much for having me, my friend.
I want to ask you this. You heard that sound initially when you said, get the F out of our city. You said that to ICE. Obviously, they haven't listened. How would you describe the state of affairs today at this particular moment in time right now?
Things are chaotic right now in the streets because we've had literally thousands of federal agents come into Minneapolis. And the way that this operation has been conducted, at least to this point, has not been about safety. It hasn't even been about immigration. It's about creating what seems to be a political narrative about who Minneapolis residents are and what we're about. And at the same time, I'll tell you, I am inspired by like the tens of thousands of people here in Minneapolis that are peacefully protesting on the streets. I'm inspired by the people that are dropping meals off for people that would otherwise be afraid to go outside and, you know, standing guard, watching over a church or a daycare. Right now, Minneapolis residents are showing up for each other. And, you know, that in and of itself is truly incredible. And so while these times are really hard, they're also momentous, and Minneapolis is meeting the magnitude of this moment.
What kind of explanation have you been given, if any at all, as to why Minneapolis was chosen as the city where over 3,000 federal agents would be sent to in terms of curbing illegal immigration and what have you? What kind of explanation have you been given?
Stephen A., I don't have much of an explanation, because if you cared about focusing specifically on people that are undocumented in our country, well, we don't have that many in Minneapolis, at least relatively speaking. If you cared about safety, well, hey, we're willing to partner on safety. In fact, we've done that in Minneapolis extensively. We've worked with the DEA and the ATF and the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office to successfully drive down crime. Shootings, for instance, on the north side right now of our city are at a record low. And so we do partner with federal agencies to drive down crime. What we won't do is partner on enforcing federal immigration law. Why? Because I don't want our police officers spending time hunting down a father who just dropped his kids off at daycare, is about to go work a 12-hour shift, who happens to be from Ecuador. I want our police officers catching murderers and investigating crime and answering 911 calls. That's the basic work of being a police officer.
What about those who look at it and they look at it from this perspective? They say, okay, this Minnesota is a great state. You have state and local officials that are literally defying federal law. ICE is obviously a federal agency. The president is the commander in chief. He's handed down an order, and you have individuals, law enforcement officials, government officials in the state of Minnesota, in the city of Minneapolis, who are not willing to follow federal law. Even Trump just put out some post on his Truth Social platform where he's talking about your statement about not, you know, being cooperative is defying federal law. You see the statement right there. Mayor Jacob Frey just stated that Minneapolis does not and will not enforce federal immigration law. This is after having a very good conversation with him. Could somebody in his inner sanctum please explain that this statement is a very serious violation of law and that he is playing with fire? What do you make of the statement from the president? Do you agree or disagree with what he's saying from a lawful perspective?
So I agree that we did have a productive conversation. I disagree that we are violating federal law. Here's how it works. In Minneapolis, we're going to do our jobs, but we're not going to do somebody else's job. Our job is keeping the residents of our city safe. Our job is making sure that our police officers are responding to 911 calls. So we've only got a limited number of officers, in fact, about 600. And their time is best spent keeping people in our city safe. Now, federal agents, specifically ICE, they enforce immigration law. And by the way, this is not a policy that is unique to the city of Minneapolis. This is a policy that has been followed, you know, even in New York City now for generations, going back even before Rudy Giuliani. And the reason is that when something tough happens, when a crime goes down, we want everybody to feel comfortable calling 911 without the risk that they're going to get deported for doing so. And so to have that interaction with your local government is critically important. Otherwise, we're creating people that'll just be fugitives for their whole life that are not actually engaging with a system of safety in their respective cities. So this is not a wild policy. Again, it's not. It was even followed, you know, by the radical leftist in Rudy Giuliani.
Define your definition, Mr. Mayor, of what a sanctuary city is and how you feel about sanctuary cities existing in this nation.
Well, there's this terminology around sanctuary city. Put that aside for a second. I'll tell you what we've got in Minneapolis. What we have is something called a separation ordinance. And what the separation ordinance says is that we do not enforce federal immigration law. We do not have our police officers, our public officials working with any federal agency on federal enforcement of immigration law. Now, we do work with them extensively on sorting out crime, on investigating murders and homicides, on driving down a narcotics trade. What the separation ordinance also says is that our police officers, our public officials, will not ask the question as to whether a person is documented or not. Why? We want people of all backgrounds to call 911 when a crime is committed. We want people to engage with their police department and feel the trust in doing so that they're not just going to get deported. That's actually a really important piece, not for purposes of immigration or politics. It's an important piece for safety in our city.
Talking to Mayor Jacob Pry from Minneapolis right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I got to ask you this. When you talked about just illegal migrants in a city, people who cross the border illegally, that's what people call them. I want to ask you, how many do you believe you have in your city at this particular moment in time?
How many people that are undocumented or living in Minneapolis?
Yes, sir. Undocumented. Yes. Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I don't really have a guess as to how many presently are here. I do know that I think that the federal administration just got it kind of wrong. You know, some of this is speculative, but I think that a month or two ago, somebody from pretty high up said, you know, go to Minneapolis and arrest and deport a bunch of Somalis. And there wasn't adequate pushback on that directive. And they get here only to find out that the Somalis are here legally. They're by and large American citizens. You know, they got here on a plane. And so, you know, suddenly they're looking around for, you know, what to do next. And attention got redirected towards our Latino community. I mean, you know, here's the bottom line. If the goal is to go after murderers and rapists and people that have destabilized safety in Minneapolis, we're, of course, on board. But is the goal to go after someone who's been here for 29, 30 years working as a baker? I mean, is that the goal? Nobody has ever come to me and say, yeah, that baker, you know, the breads and the cakes, that's just a bridge too far. We got to get this guy out of here. I mean, nobody said that to me. And so let's put aside, you know, discussion about immigration and let's talk about safety. Let's talk about crime. Let's work on, that's what I would say to people. You know, if the goal is to get murderers, the first question that you ask is not where are you from? The first question that you want to figure out is, did they commit a murder? And yeah, if that's the case, you arrest them, you prosecute them, you charge them, you put them in jail. We're all for that.
Is that what you said to President Trump?
You know, in different words, of course. Yeah, look, I'll say we had a productive conversation. It was a collegial a conversation, and I certainly expressed that we do partner. We do partner, and we'll continue to partner. We'll deepen a partnership around getting violent criminals off our streets in Minneapolis and throughout the state of Minnesota. We had partnerships with multiple administrations, with the U.S. Attorney's Office, that have been very successful in driving down violent crime. In fact, look, in Minneapolis, crime is down in virtually every category, in virtually every neighborhood of the city, and in part due to partnerships that we've had with the federal government. But no, there seems to be a shift to want to bring it back to immigration and ripping these families apart that have made Minneapolis a better place. And no, I'm not on board with that.
Are you of the belief that the DHS is not telling the truth when it says its objective is removing gang members from Minneapolis? You know, when they say that, they verified gang validation, charges, convictions, intelligence flags, et cetera, et cetera. When they say that's their primary focus, are you of the mindset that they weren't telling the truth, that that's not what they're looking for? They're just looking to grab anybody that they think has crossed the border illegally, and that's what this is about.
Well, if the goal is to remove gang members that have created chaos and violence in Minneapolis, man, let's do it. No objection there. We've had task forces that have been set up with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I believe there was an attorney over there at the U.S. Attorney's Office that was the head gang guy that has since left. And so if that's the goal, hey, let's do this. But somehow I'm not sure that's the goal.
You know, we're talking to Mayor Fry right here with Stephen A. on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I want to ask you this about sanctuary cities, because Trump has been on the record, you know, entertaining essentially compromising federal funding to a state like Minnesota, to a city like Minneapolis, and any sanctuary city. He's clearly targeting it from that perspective, and he's alluded to making sure that you feel the pinch financially, you or anybody else who is non-cooperative with him and federal authorities. Are you concerned about that? If so, please explain why. If not, please explain why not.
Of course, I'm always concerned about the financial well-being of our city. I'm also concerned about some of the unconstitutional conduct that we have seen in our streets. To be very clear, look, ICE has been around for a long time. ICE has operated in Minneapolis and, you know, virtually every city throughout the country. We're not talking about ICE doing normal ICE stuff. We're talking about large groups of federal agents just going through the street and indiscriminately picking up Latinos and Somalis. A pregnant woman was dragged through the street. A five-year-old was detained. We've had two people killed, and Alex Preddy and Renee Good. This is not ICE doing normal stuff. And so we've got to just talk about the reality that we are seeing on our streets. And by the way, it's not just a lack of safety we're seeing. This is also bad for business, for people that care about the economy and business. We've had these amazing longstanding businesses, these institutions in Minneapolis that have been hit incredibly hard because there's a lot of people, specifically people of color, that are afraid to go outside because they themselves might get picked up and their family might get torn apart, even those that are American citizens. You know, we've had American citizens that have gotten picked up simply because they, you know, looked the wrong way. And I mean, I think there is a broad recognition, and I'm hopeful that this will result in some action, but I think there is a broad recognition that the status quo and the present status can't continue.
Man, Fry, I've heard people describe the killing of Renee Good and Alex Preddy as murder, flat out, plain and simple. I didn't hear those words come out of your mouth. I don't know. Maybe I missed it or what have you. I'm asking you now, how would you describe what happened to them?
Well, look, you know, I'm in a position right now where we've got investigations that are coming down the pike. We need to make sure that they're done fairly and judiciously. But, you know, I mean, imagine for a second here if with Alex Preddy, if that group of people that killed him weren't wearing uniforms. No uniforms. Just imagine regular activity on the street. No uniforms. What would you call that? And it, Look, it is horrific. I want to make sure that a full and a fair investigation takes place, and I don't want to detract from that. We need justice right now. We need justice. We need truth. And clearly, we haven't seen that when you have a federal administration, people in federal government, you know, jump to conclusions from the very beginning that, you know, the agent that killed Renee Good was just operating in self-defense, and that, you know, Renee Good was a domestic terrorist.
Right.
I mean, we've seen how they've tried to paint Alex Preti as well. And, you know, yeah, I've got a deep issue with that. These are our neighbors.
How are you feeling about Border Czar Tom Homan being sent to Minneapolis? Have you spoken to him, first of all? And how do you feel about his presence there? And Mr. Bovino now being gone and sent back to his regular post and what have you. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, look, we met with the Border Czar, Tom Homan, just yesterday, had a productive meeting. And so I want to obviously continue to work wherever we can to draw down this operation, to end Operation Metro Surge. And I've expressed to him what I expressed to you, which is, look, of course, we are willing to partner to keep people safe around violent crime. But again, let's keep the focus on violent crime. We're all for reducing murders and homicides and carjackings in the city of Minneapolis. You know, and I also made clear that we've got a separation ordinance in the city of Minneapolis. So we don't force federal immigration law. We do our jobs. We have a job to do. Our jobs as Minneapolis and our police department is to keep people safe.
So it's a fair and accurate to depict that what you're saying is you're not trying to operate against federal officers. What you're saying is that as you know, from a local and state perspective, you have your job to do and you're doing your job. You're not going to do their job for them. Is that the message that you want to get across as it pertains to dealing with ICE officials and what have you?
Yeah, generally speaking, that's accurate. We have a job to do. We've got 600 police officers in the city. They've got between 3,000 and 4,000 ICE agents and border control. Obviously, there's a massive imbalance there. And I need our police officers spending the limited time and resources that they have of responding to 911 calls and just doing the basic job of a cop. And by the way, they're doing it exceptionally well. I'm proud to work with our incredible Minneapolis police officers and people. Even some of the harshest critics of our police department locally have said, hey, you know what? They really have built out some trust. They are doing a good job. They are helping keep us safe and they're working together with us. You know, I've heard that quite a bit as of late. They're also probably seeing the juxtaposition between the conduct of our Minneapolis police officers and that of some of these federal agents, because it's drastically different. And so we've got a job to do. We are going to do our job, but we're not going to do other people's jobs for them.
Last couple of questions before I let you get on out of here. And thank you so much for your time. I mean, with the heightened tensions and armed federal presence that we've witnessed, I want to know, from an operational perspective, what's the plan to protect peaceful protests and to stop and limit the intimidation and the violence? Is there an operational plan in effect to curb, to sort of minimize that kind of stuff that we've been seeing?
We've got a massive plan that is in effect. I mean, Minneapolis, we didn't sit on our hands after 2020. We did a ton of work around emergency preparedness and making sure that not just our police officers, but our whole enterprise was well coordinated and communicating properly. And the message to people in our city has been very clear, which is, yeah, express your First Amendment rights. That's, you know, one of the most Minneapolis things that they can do. Express your First Amendment rights, of course, document and record some of the activity that is taking place. But at the same time, continue to not take the bait. Don't take the bait. We don't want to give anybody an excuse to have an additional deployment of federal agents or even military into our city. We don't want to counter one brand of chaos with our own brand of chaos here. You know, when you've seen, again, Minneapolis residents step up by the tens of thousands to help people out. I mean, that's never been prouder to be from here.
Last question to you, Mayor Fry. When you look at this situation in its totality and the profound impact it's had, not just on your city, but on this nation, as we've witnessed what's transpired, it's obvious what you're hoping for. But knowing who you're dealing with, from the Christie Gnomes to Tom Holman to ICE agents themselves answerable to those individuals, to the president of the United States that you were just on a phone call with today, what is your expectation moving forward for the immediate future?
Look, I've got hopes and I've got expectations, but I want to see it. I want to see a drawdown of this massive deployment of federal agents. I want to see the conduct change so we don't have these crews of federal agents indiscriminately picking people up. What I'll say is, look, I am hopeful. I'm always hopeful that we can make a change here, and I'll believe it when I see it.
Mayor Jacob Fry, Minneapolis, Minnesota, thank you so much for your time out of your busy schedule. I know you've got other commitments to go to. Just know anytime you want to talk, anytime you need a platform, you want to come on the show, you're more than welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen A.
All right. One and only, Mayor Jacob Fry from Minneapolis, Minnesota, right here with Stephen A. Straight Shooter with yours truly. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. We'll close the show out over the next half hour or so with nothing but your phone calls and yours truly. Don't go away. You are listening and watching Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more in a minute. Hour number 2 back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Newsflash, the White House just put out word that Tom Holman, the border czar, will hold a press conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. That will certainly be one to watch. Thanks again to Mayor Jacob Fry of Minneapolis for coming on the show, taking time out of his schedule to speak on the various issues that he spoke about pertaining to Minneapolis. We all know between Renee Good and Alex Pretty, it's a lot to talk about. Two American citizens gunned down in the streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota. That is not a good thing. That is not Trump's intent. That was not the administration's intent for sure, because obviously it's a disastrous circumstance for them to be in optically and beyond. And I think that if this stuff continues, it's definitely going to cost the GOP immensely. So all of those are things to think about. It's inescapable, and it's exactly what we're going to do as we're sitting here talking about this right now. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. This 866-96-POTUS. You are listening live, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Daniel in Florida. You're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, Daniel. How are you?
Hey, Stephen A. I'm doing pretty good. Much better than in Minneapolis.
Yes, you are. Ain't that the truth. Ain't that the truth.
Yeah. The comment I wanted to make is I wanted to thank you for your interview with Mayor Fry.
Okay.
Because it's the first one I've heard that didn't have all the sharp angle, accusatory questions, just a search for information.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
No, we're not trying to do that on this show. We're not about that. We're going to ask the questions that need to be asked, the questions that the American people want to know. But we want this to be a place where people know they're going to be asked the questions that the American citizen wants to know about. But they're going to have the freedom to answer. And the public will judge based on what they're listening to, what their answers are. They'll check the veracity of their words, et cetera, et cetera. And we move forward. If somebody wants to come on in and lie through their teeth and be duplicitous and phony and all of that stuff, we'll know through their answers, because we'll be looking up the answers and making sure we dot I's and cross T's to make sure what they're telling the truth about and what they're lying about. And if they're honest and forthcoming, but they're honest with their verbiage and what their positions and perspectives are, we have to respect that, even if we disagree. That is the American way. And that is what Straight Shooter with Stephen A is all about. And it's what it's going to be about as long as I'm here.
Well, I can testify that in Minnesota, there was a real crime problem, but it wasn't illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants.
Okay.
It was a gang problem. Hopefully that's getting addressed. My daughter used to live right well, she works right now at the downtown hospital, Allied Health. And she said it's just crazy. She got trapped in work the other night for 6 hours because they blocked off the entire road and tear gas was coming in the hospital.
Yeah.
It was really pretty tragic to hear from her while she was stuck there.
Understood. And as a father, I can imagine how fearful you were to making sure that she was going to be safe and get home safely.
Yeah, a lot of innocent people get caught in the crossfire.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I wanted to, I'm proud of Mayor Fry. I thought he expressed what's going on up there pretty accurately.
Okay.
All
right.
You know, like the one point that he made that really should make Americans think is, what would you think if those guys weren't in uniform?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a very valid point, but they were in uniform and they did it anyway, which makes it even worse. And so that's what we got to look at. But Daniel, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Aram in Texas, you're live with Stephen A. Good evening. How are you?
Hi, Stephen. I have a bunch of things, but if I want to go over these, you have to give me 10, 15 minutes.
You're not getting that long. You're not getting that long, but I will give you some time. Go ahead. Make your point. You've been holding on for an hour. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's why I want to cut my losses. I'm not going to ever argue with you on sports. You're the king. But on issues of policies, constitutional aspects, laws, I would suggest you get some more homework. Okay. We have a federal form of government. No state or city is mandated to follow federal law. Because if that was the case, then the federal government should have not be following any state law. You need to read up the 10th Amendment. So the city not following the federal law is completely okay. If Trump has an issue, he can sue them in a appropriate court and see what the court says.
Well,
our AG, let me finish, please. Last time you didn't let me talk. Our AG wants to get voter registration from the state of Minnesota. She cannot send them a demand letter. If you think you have a legal case, sue them. I'm going to finish up by attributing something from Mahatma Gandhi. I'm not sure if he said it, but if in fact he said it, the saying goes, if we follow the eye for an eye motto, then nobody on earth will have an eyesight left.
Okay. Well, let me respond. May I respond? I mean, I'm being nice because I certainly can respond to my own show. But let me say this to you. First of all, of course, I need to read up on the Constitution, need to educate myself more. That's fair. But that doesn't mean I didn't know what you were talking about. I'm fully aware of the fact that you don't have to follow federal laws if you disagree with them. I understand that. The states have exercised that. The existence of sanctuary cities and states proves that point. The point I was making is how right, how effective, and how much to the betterment of the American people is it going to be? I'm not talking about painting with a broad brush as federal authorities and that should be it. But as a black man growing up in the United States of America, I recognize the fact that federal laws being enforced helped us desegregate schools, helped us acquire civil rights, civil liberties, etc. So I understand the value of it all as well. I'm simply asking a very, very poignant question, albeit a simple one. If state laws engage in the kind of behavior that ignore federal laws and vice versa, federal laws ignoring state laws, how do we have a government? How do we have something shy, something that doesn't digress or regress into mayhem? At some point in time, we should all aspire for us to be very, very like-minded in terms of the laws of our land and everybody following it instead of working diligently to circumvent them. That was my point. It wasn't my point that the states should automatically have to listen to the federal government and what have you. And I think a lot of people got confused. For example, weeks ago when I got on Senator Mark Kelly because of him doing a video telling troops that, you know what, you don't have to follow any unlawful orders. I wasn't saying that a troop should. What I was saying was that you being a former military man yourself, knowing that by saying so, you positioned yourself to be attacked by the Trump administration, and in this case, the Department of War, Pete Hegseth, and what have you, maybe it would have been better for somebody who hadn't served in the military to say such a thing, because the military lives by a different code of ethics and a different code of laws, and you knew they were going to come after him. So why couldn't you leave that for somebody else to put on a video instead of jeopardizing yourself by doing so? That's what I said. And I think a lot of times people get misconstrued because they want to hear what they want to hear instead of what was actually said.
Okay, well, and everything that Dr. Oz said, why he's not getting Trump to follow. He eats processed food, his BMI is out the door, and so on. So it's easy to lecture others, but when it comes to doing it, it's a different story.
Now, well, that could be said about both sides of the aisle. Both sides of the aisle are guilty of that. You calling up here when Dr. Oz did it, okay? There's plenty of people that were doing it when Biden was in office. There's plenty of people that were doing it when Obama was in office. That's the issue with the politics. They both do the same kind of stuff. It's just that they cater to their constituency while doing it. But both of them are guilty of similar behavior. Maybe a little bit different with Trump, no doubt, because the kind of stuff that we're seeing now, it's incredibly, incredibly alarming. But it does also alarm me that Obama and his administration deported over 3.1 million people. And in the process of doing so, I saw networks doing features on ICE like they were the best thing going. But now, all of a sudden, they're pariahs. I understand why they're pariahs now, because I don't like what I'm seeing from them in the streets of Minneapolis. I'm here to tell you that right now. I didn't like what I was seeing from them in Portland. I didn't like what I was seeing from them in Los Angeles. I damn sure didn't like what I was seeing from them in Chicago. That is all true. But in the same breath, the same people that were once celebrated are now excoriated because a different administration is in office. I'm asking for consistency. So we'll all know definitively what is right and what is wrong and how we can govern ourselves accordingly. That's what I want. What about you?
Well, I appreciate you stating your opinion. I voted and supported Obama for his first term. I did not vote for him for his second term for some of the reasons you mentioned. Okay. But nonetheless, they followed the law during Clinton's first term.
That's true.
Yes, sir.
That's true. They did.
But Trump is not.
That's
true. Is the difference. Trump keeps telling us he's an art of the deal. Where is the artful approach he's
doing?
You
know what? I got to go. I got to go, Iram. But I got to tell you, you're 1,000% right on that. I said that weeks ago. Where's the art of the deal? Where's the negotiator in chief? Where's the guy that finds a way to get things done, to engage in appeasement, getting what you want, but knowing how to appease the other side? That's part of the art of the deal. And we have not seen that from him. That's a very, very valid point on your part. And I commend you for that. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Let's go to Trina in California. I believe that's who it is. You're live with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Good evening. How are you, Trina?
Hi, Stephen A. I just wanted to call. I'm a physician here in San Diego, so border okay. state, border okay. city. And, you know, one of the comments that Dr. Oz made was that in California, we are handing out amazing health care to all these undocumented immigrants. I just wanted to comment that that is actually completely false. I see patients that come across the border that are undocumented, and I'm an oncologist, so they have cancer, they want treatment, and we can't give it to them because they cannot get insurance, okay? So they don't get insurance, they don't get some kind of fancy insurance. Maybe they will go on to go through the system and get Medi-Cal, but even Medi-Cal doesn't pay for all these wonderful things.
Hold on. Hold on, Trina. I have to ask you a question. It's very, very important, and I appreciate you call in and saying what you have to say, but I must ask you a question. You brought up Medi-Cal, which is basically California's, you know, system for Medicare. I must ask you, aren't you guys like $8 billion in the hole? Isn't that the number?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of that.
Okay, well, let me tell you why I'm asking you that. Because whatever hole you're in, it's because of exorbitant spending that has taken place. And there is no doubt that some of that spending has been spent on migrants who have crossed the border illegally. There's no doubt about that. So you can get into the specifics as to people might having cancer or other ailments and illnesses, right? And how you can't treat them. But that still doesn't mean that an exorbitant amount of money has not been paid on folks who have crossed the border illegally. And if you are an American citizen paying your taxes, living in this country, there are people that are going to have a problem with that. I personally know a friend who got into a car accident that is a resident of California that was struggling to receive treatment. And it was a long wait. And they were talking about the price that it was going to cost her and what have you. She had gone to the emergency room, et cetera, cost the tens of thousands of dollars. And they said services would have been quicker and it would have been better had you been an illegal immigrant. They actually told her that. So I'm saying to you that even though you may be right about the specificity of what Dr. Oz was alluding to, in general, these are real issues that are taking place in the state of California. You wouldn't think to deny that, would you, Trina?
I think that's one story, and I'm so sorry that your friend experienced that. I see Medi-Cal patients, you know, in my clinic, so I know the frustrations that go along with having that insurance. They are not getting the kind of care that someone with a United Healthcare is getting, and not because of my office, but because they are shifted around the system. They have very long wait times. They are not given the drugs that they should be getting, the more advanced technology and things like that that we're doing for patients who are able to afford commercial insurance. So I can't speak to the specifics of the wastage that's happening here in California. I'm sure that there's a lot we can do to improve the system here. But I did want to kind of retract. I wanted to counteract the point that he was making, that they are getting some kind of fancy insurance when they hop the border and are illegal here.
I got you. And the operative word there would be fancy. They're not getting some kind of fancy insurance, but they definitely have something. And I alluded to Medicare instead of Medicaid. Medi-Cal, when you're talking about Medi-Cal, you're talking about California's implementation of the federal Medicaid program, serving low-income individuals, including families, seniors, persons with disabilities, children in foster care, pregnant women, and childless adults with incomes below 138% of the federal poverty level. So that's what we were talking about with Medi-Cal, helping the unfortunate, the impoverished, the disenfranchised. That's what Medi-Cal does. And we can understand where that comes from. Your heart's got to be in the right place, which is why I don't condemn Gavin Newsom for some of the things that he does, because I think his heart is in the right place as the governor of California, and he tries to do the right thing and tries to serve all people. But it's just that you can't pull off everything for everybody, unfortunately, particularly when you're using the American taxpayer dollar to do it. It's very, very difficult, but there's a lot to talk about. Trina, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. Your calls to close out the show in a minute. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more in a second. Hour number 2 back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a video circulating now. Alex Pretty, the individual shot by ICE officers, killed the other day. There's a video surfacing now from 11 days earlier where it shows ICE agents is in an SUV driving away. And Alex is screaming at them. He's kicking their vehicle. And he's spitting at the vehicle. He's spitting. So that's going, that story is making waves as we speak. It's been aired on CNN several times. And I have no doubt it's going to be aired on Fox News and other places as well. Regardless of how much people disdain fairness, fairness is always the order of the day. This does not mean that he deserved to be gunned down. What it does mean is that he was antagonistic, he was polarizing, and there was a, kicking and spitting at vehicles with ICE officers in it and stuff like that as they're driving away before they ultimately stop and got out the car and grabbed them 11 days earlier. They're trying to put on display how antagonistic and, dare they say, volatile he was. It's not justification for shooting him. I want to be very, very clear about that. But in the same breath, you know, folks on the right are going to look at it and say he did have a gun on him, although it was licensed and he was licensed to carry and had a permit and all of that. You know, it's not a good situation and it's making waves. Make no mistake about that. On another note, a couple of officers, two officers accused of killing Alex Pretty, have been put, correct me if I'm wrong, Jennifer, I believe it was administrative leave. Yes, they are on administrative leave effective immediately. And Tom Holman, the board czar, is in Minneapolis as we speak, scheduled to hold a press conference tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. So there you have it. Let's go back to the phones. Paul in California, you're live with Stephen A. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing wonderful, sir. How are you today?
Thank you for calling, man. Appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that it's hard to deal with Trump just because of the way he moves. Like, everything's a pretext. He doesn't step into a situations where he's being upfront with you. So he turns his pretext, gives you a pretext, and then he moves in what he really wants to talk about.
Well, can I challenge you on that? I agree with
yes,
you
please.
That Trump is very difficult to deal with. I don't like his style at all. It's why one of the biggest reasons I didn't vote for him, because I think where he is, chaos arrives. And I think and I think he oftentimes resembles a bully as opposed to somebody that wants to engage in diplomacy and decency. And I have a problem with that. Having said that, what I'm not going to do is accuse him of not being forthcoming about who he is and what he wants to do. If you listen to people who have voted for him, they will tell you he's doing exactly what he told them he was going to do. And their belief is that he's one of the more honest politicians in terms of what his actions were going to be, because he's unapologetic about what he was going to do. And he told them on the campaign trail, and he's doing exactly what he told them he was going to do. And that's what they love about him. So I'm telling you, this notion that he's not honest about his intent, they're like, oh, yes, he is. Oh, yes, he is.
Okay. And
I say that
to you about it.
I say that to you, Paul. Paul, you're not wrong. I'm just saying to you that people who voted for him think differently. And their mentality is that, and that's why, to me, whether it's GOP members in the House or the Senate, along with his constituency out there, the real issue is them. Because how much are you going to be willing to turn a blind eye to? How much, I mean, when you're on this vengeance tip and this retribution tip with people that you've gone after and what have you, and the kind of things that you're willing to do and how you're targeting sanctuary cities and folks on the liberal side of the aisle and stuff like that. How much of this are you willing to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to? Because he's not going to do it. How much of it are you willing to tolerate? And I think that's the real question, because he wouldn't be able to do anything if his supporters didn't let him.
Oh, no, that you're absolutely correct. This is what he has decided. I can tell you what you mean by what you do, not what you say.
Got you.
And the things that Trump does are straightforward.
I got you.
The things that he says never straightforward.
I appreciate the call, man. You're not wrong. Appreciate the call. Tiffany in California, you're live with Stephen A. What's up, Tiffany? How are you? Good evening.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for calling.
I'm calling regarding information in media. It's always ICE. When it's not ICE, it's with Borders and Customs. So media is quick to report something that's not factual, and then it's being ran with.
Like what? Give me an example, Tiffany.
Last incident in Minnesota had nothing to do with ICE. It was Borders and Customs.
Okay.
But constantly we hear ICE. Well, this ICE agent.
Well, first of all, you hear that because ICE is there, over 3,000 of them. You heard the mayor of Minneapolis saying he only has 600 officers. They got 3,000 of these guys here. You hear the governor of the state alluding to ICE. You hear the mayor of Minneapolis alluding to ICE. You hear the people out there protesting ICE. So again, that compartmentalization that you allowed to kick in, while respectful and totally understandable, doesn't negate the fact that their participation there is seen as at the very least as being a bit antagonistic and exacerbating issues that otherwise wouldn't be so if their presence wasn't there. So when you talk about the shooting, you may very well be right. And I don't know if you are or not at this particular juncture, because to be honest with you, I haven't thought about your point until you made it. So props to you. But it is important to recognize, Tiffany, that when people are talking about what's transpiring, the presence of ICE is seen to have exacerbated situations exponentially. And I'm not even saying that that's right, because it's a sanctuary city, but ICE is federal enforcement. They are there to get illegal migrants out of our country. They are unapologetic about it. You know what the mission is. You're going to agree or disagree with it as a local official or whatever. And I get that. But their job is their job, and they're authorized by the President of the United States to exercise that job. He's doing it in a fashion that's antithetical to what Barack Obama did, because Barack Obama deported over 3.1 million people and you barely heard a peep about it, which just shows how adroit and skilled in diplomacy of a politician he is compared to Trump, who appears to be nothing but classless. But in the end, the bottom line is that the presence of ICE is the presence of ICE. And that's what everybody's been talking about, Tiff. And that's the issue.
I also wanted to point out the administrative leave. It is a rule of thumb that once an officer is involved in this type of incident, they are automatically placed on.
Well, that wasn't automatic. This happened days ago, and they weren't placed on automatic leave or on administrative leave until today. So that didn't happen automatically.
Okay. But that doesn't mean that the officer was performing duties.
What it means is that the president, the vice president, and the secretary for the Department for Homeland Security and Kristi Noem, who all spoke up on the officer's behalf before doing a thorough investigation, was a bit preemptive and a bit premature in their comments. And as a result, the White House, the administration, and others have taken backlash from it. So they've made another move to sort of insulate and distance themselves from what has transpired. It's why Tom Homan is there. It's why you see him in front of the microphone instead of Kristi Noem, because she said some things that were a bit conflicting and compromised the administration. And that's what this comes down to, Tiffany. They put their foot in their mouth, and now they're trying to cover themselves. So it's not an accident that the guys on administrative leave that just been placed on there today, this happened because you've got the White House trying to backtrack a little bit because they knew they stepped their foot out there a little bit too early and put their foot in their mouth. That's what transpired. Got to get on out of here. Appreciate the call. Appreciate all of y'all calling. Appreciate Dr. Oz and, of course, Mayor Fry for coming on the show. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Holla at y'all next Wednesday night. Until then, peace and love.